I want to thank you very much for those very kind words that I wrote. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining me this afternoon. It's a sort of a triple whammy when you follow a series of great speakers, a hearty lunch, and beautiful weather. You may have noticed the coffee was particularly strong with lunch. That was, you have me to thank for that. You may even detected a hint of Red Bull in your iced tea. I have no shame. That was not part of my presentation. That is rather eerie. We are here to talk about mastering the art of first impressions. And I was just sharing with Julie and others that it seems like the theme of the talks this weekend have just been tailor-made to lead up to this. It's all about the power of words and how the words that we master can allow us to master the art of persuasion. And so many of the presenters, Tom Flick and Kevin Hall and Robert Cialdini, spoke about the same subject. And I'm going to talk about it in a more narrower sense, at least in terms of a specific skill that we want you all to acquire. It's a link in the chain of success from creating awareness among a prospective patient to a happy treatment-accepting patient. And so this is a necessary, but far from the only, link in that success chain, of course. I'm just curious to know, how many here are active ADPA members, by a show of hands? Okay. And how many are new members? Okay. The rest of you are guests? You're a new member? Okay. That's pretty new. How many guests do we have here? Okay. Excellent. So you're a guest. Okay, we were just talking. What's your name?
My name is Lisa.
Lisa. I won't ask you to stand up, Lisa. Lisa had surgery in March, had a plate put in. The plate broke, and she feels sorry for her doctor because he's, I don't know, I mean, it's nice because he cares, but boy, that's amazing. What have you thought of the experience, actually? Thank you for sharing. Mm-hmm. I've had a similar experience. You know, every year it's a decision whether to attend or not, because it is a commitment. And it's not really the money so much as the time away from practice. And every time I come, I'm reminded about why I come. It's not just a chance to recharge and rejuvenate, but the quality of the talk, the speakers, is just, I think it's exemplary. And again, it's a challenge that I'm confident that you'll be glad that you stuck around this afternoon. I have spoken to the group before and am grateful to have been invited back to speak again. It's an august group. I trace my connections to ADPA back to 1995 at the Phoenician Hotel in Phoenix. So it's I've been able to witness and to some extent participate in the growth and development of this group. And it's one of the best organizations going. I wanted to share our vision, mission, and values statement because this has very much to do with the power of words and the believability. I think Dr. Cialdini went to great lengths today to say that it's ethical as long as it's true. And as long as you believe what you have to offer is special, then really you do a disservice to the public when you keep it a secret. So our commitment is to improving and preserving the health of the people of the United States, primarily by working with private practice dentists who share this vision. And our mission is to support their vision by offering proven cost-effective tactics that help connect with current as well as prospective patients. And in addition to that, helping grow your professional referral network, which is where the American Academy of Oral Systemic Health can play a very important role. Our values include accountability, compassion, charity, health and fitness, and a true commitment to results and success. This is our tagline. Let me rephrase that. This was our tagline, a variation of it, which is how we answer the phone. Myself and my team member answer the phone the same way every time. And until recently, it was thank you for calling ADM, where we take aim with your marketing. This is Danny. How may I help you? We're committed to constant improvement and to distilling our message. And for the past year or so, it is now, thank you for calling ADM, where we help make the connection. Because we feel that that more accurately presents the connections that we can offer you to help you make the connections with your patients, your community, your team, any public that you are interested in making an impact with. The first service is our commitment to oral systemic health. How many people here are familiar with AOSH, the American Academy of Oral Systemic Health? Okay, good, good, a fair amount of you. We're only 4 years old. Actually, 3 years and 2 months. We were founded in, 4 months. We were founded in late 2010 in Madison, Wisconsin, and we now are close to 900 members. This is a groundswell, and it's a very exciting, it's a privilege for me as a non-clinician to be able to participate in any capacity to helping improve the health and welfare of the people of the country, and to help the practices to benefit, to do well by doing good. You'll hear that phrase in many contexts throughout my talk today, because that's what our commitment is too. We also offer a webcast called Practice Perfection. This is a complimentary webcast, approximately once a month, where I invite a key thought leader or influencer who can speak to one of the three C's, as I like to call them, of oral systemic practice. Those three C's being clinical, collaborative, and communication. So we will have people speak about oral DNA. In fact, Tom Neighbors, guest, was one of our speakers, as was Dr. Brad Bale of the Heart Attack and Stroke Prevention Center in Spokane, Washington. We also have people that can speak to helping grow your professional referral network, and people that can help educate you on being increasing the literacy among your patient base, not just the dental IQ. And that'll be Tony Segrist Adams. We just had a presenter on sleep studies. This is complimentary, and oh, this was supposed to be my cue, which I of course missed. I have a sign-up sheet, and if you'll just provide me with your contact information, please print legibly, super legibly, because I don't see well. I'll get you information on any or all of these entities with your permission. So that's a complimentary webcast you can subscribe to. Oops, get back here. Our cause marketing vehicle is called Climb for a Cause and the Smile Tree. We realize that not everybody likes to climb a mountain. It's a bit of a misnomer, though, actually, because Climb for a Cause is really Hike for a Cause, but that just doesn't flow as well. And so we use Climb for a Cause, but if you don't want to enjoy the indescribable experience of hiking to the top of a vista, you can be a branch office of the Smile Tree. You can reach out and leave a smile, as we like to say. Both of these entities support the same cause, which is oral health education and treatment projects in Guatemala, Nepal, Vietnam, and India. And Kevin spoke at length about how the secret is that you always get more than you give. And that is never truer than when you get involved in an effort to help desperately poor children in these countries. Again, any interest in that, you let me know, and I'll be glad to share with you. We also offer a health coaching curriculum. I am a personal trainer and a certified health coach, and Take Shape for Life is a model to help you help your patients become healthier. And if you're in a situation where you would benefit from health in your life or in your dental team's life, this is a wonderful way to help you to lead by example, essentially. Gives you a lot more credibility when you're talking to your patients. So that's something, again, these are all optional, but these are where my passions are. AIM Dental Marketing is sort of the hub of the wheel. AIM Dental Marketing is our get the phone to ring services through web-based marketing, direct mail, public relations, cause marketing. They're all very, quite interrelated. And what we found, because I am a bit of a quant jock and am very big on tracking and knowing what's working, and most of our clients appreciate that too, we have telephone tracking numbers. For instance, if we're doing a direct mail project for your practice, we would put a telephone number on the direct mail piece that was not available anywhere else. So anyone who used that telephone number would directly connect to your office, And we would be able to know exactly how many people called as a result of that particular tactic. In addition, we're able to listen in on the conversations so we can hear what challenges or triumphs the team member is having in connecting with this prospective patient. And the fact that the art of first impressions exists would probably suggest to you that what we heard suggested a real need for this curriculum. And that's really why the art of first impressions was born. It's not much of a, yes? We have a service. The question is, how do you get the number? We offer a service called Lead Track, and we will assign the telephone number for you. It's actually included in our service if you're doing one of our services. But if you just came to me and said, hey, I have a Yellow Page ad that I'd like to be able to track the effectiveness of, can you get me a number? And the answer would be yes. And it's extremely nominal. What I was just going to share is that this isn't much of a profit center for us. It's really a... It is a matter of enlightened self-interest. I know that if you're investing in getting your phone to ring, that what happens after the phone rings had better be good. You'd better have your team ready to successfully and consistently connect with those leads that you're paying so much money to generate, or you're not going to get the return on investment that you otherwise would. And that's why we created this. It turned out that I happen to love coaching on this more than anything else. Frankly, I'd rather have other people implement the get the phone to ring aspect of the program, and I do to a large extent. So it frees me up to talk to folks like you today and to help coach your team if called upon. So we did that. Just a little reminder, the fourth annual scientific session of the American Academy for Oral Systemic Health will be in St. Louis over the weekend of the 26th of September. They have a great lineup once again, and I hope that you'll consider. If you do fill out the form, or if you can remember this too, if you do decide to be a member of this organization, and I'm not affiliated with it officially any longer, I just support it because I'm so passionate about it. And really, it's kind of like I let my child go. You know, I kept an eye on it and made sure it was doing the things, and now it's on its own. But if you go to aaosh.org and decide to join, I can give you a promo code where you can save $50. It's only $249 to join. And it's only $99 if you're a team member, so it's very cost effective anyway, but I'll be glad to provide that to you. This is not the kind of climb for a cause that we will typically do. This is me having fun. After our last AOSH meeting in Las Vegas, I went out to Red Rock Canyon, which has some really world-class climbing, and got a chance to have some fun on this is the beginning of the route. It's called aptly epinephrine, and it's a 2,000-foot climb. 500 feet of it are chimney climbing, where you kind of bump and grind your way up this chimney with your back against the rock and your feet in front of you. And my C6 is still feeling it after from September 23rd. But it was worth it. So why is this important? I'm probably preaching to the choir here, but as I'd mentioned, it's a link in the chain of success. You can have the best services in the world. You can have the best team. And one thing I can't do, and Dr. Cialdini said this, he makes the assumption that your offering is great, and he would never presume, nor would I, to tell you how to improve your offering, except to the extent that I share some information through our webcast series and AOSH membership, but you're the experts. What I can do is help you and your team to demonstrate their caring and their professionalism far more effectively over the telephone so that they can connect with those folks, because if they can't connect with those folks, then you'll never have an opportunity to help them, right? So that's why it's important. Thursday, I decided to do a little side trip here. I thought I'd bring a little bit of a local flavor here. There's a mountain, Mount Eisenhower, and I tried orienting myself that way. If this is west, then I think it is. It's that way. And this is a 6.5-mile loop. Didn't realize that it was 5 miles to get there, so it wound up being a 16-mile event for me on Thursday. But, you know, didn't bring a lot of water, but fortunately there were places to refill on the way because water's important in the desert. But it was a really great experience, and I know that Adpa had talked about doing a hike like that for charity, and it kind of fell through. And I mention it because they do listen to their members, and if you're interested in doing something that's going to challenge you physically and do it for a good cause, it could be, sort of be a mini climb for a cause. So if that appeals to any of you, I hope you'll make your voice known. Here's what we're going to cover today. We've touched on some things, but we're going to work for a little while on setting the stage for success. Going to beg your indulgence a little bit because, like any structure, it needs to be built on a firm foundation. We will then dive into the components that constitute effective communication. And from that, we will discuss a phenomenon. We will address an issue, which is the visual gap, as well as avoiding the self-fulfilling prophecy trap, and the difference between negatively and positively charged words. As you know, words have meaning, words have power, there's power in words, and this is just going to be another illustration of that. We'll then move on to the emotional underpinnings of effective communication. Empathy, rapport, enthusiasm, all of which leads to questioning and listening technique, and the science and art of listening and asking the right questions in the right way at the right time, culminating in the goal, which is agreement. Gaining agreement from the caller based on a full understanding and a true ability to help the patient. Now, sometimes I am asked, and that's why I took the time to talk about the importance of setting the stage for success. People say, well, just give me the magic bullet. Give me the script. Someone says, are you in my network? I want to know how to get that person to forget they ever asked that question and get them into the office. And the truth is there is a script. There are several scripts for that. But using them before you had a stage for success or a firm foundation is like building the fourth floor of the house before you've laid the foundation. Or putting the cart before the horse before you build a firm foundation. Sometimes I get this. Don't give me the script. I hate scripts. I won't read off a script. We'll talk a little bit more about that too, because somewhere in the middle is the truth. And I'm going to give you a little sneak peek of what we call the Taffy introduction, Taffy being short for the Art of First Impressions. I'm giving you a sneak peek, just a taste, because expecting you to embrace and practice this would again be putting the cart before the horse. It would be not practicing what I am preaching. But I wanted to show it to you because my goal today is that by the end of our talk, this script will make sense to you. And if you're like me, and I suspect you are, I'm only going to do something if I believe in it. And I'm only going to believe in something if I understand why I should believe in it. Sometimes you have to take things on faith a little bit. And this is an example of one. The analogy is like a golf swing. When you adopt a new script, and here it is, anything, if you're, how many golfers here? Okay, how many tennis players? Okay, how many mountain climbers? Ah, that's what I thought, everyone's a mountain climber. Okay. Well, if you want to perfect your mountain climbing skills, you can seek out a coach and they will teach you a new technique and you're going to be pretty lousy at it for a while. And that's just inherent in learning. You know, you're up here where you're comfortable. You try something new and you're going to dip for a while, and then when you master it, you're going to be far better than you were when you started. And it's the same thing with this. I will tell you, too, that the blue letter phrases are the positively charged words. The red phrases are questions. They're both vitally important in connecting with the caller. This introduction is essentially the first impression of your first impression. It's the taffy greeting or introduction, and I want to hear team members practice this and use it in, I don't know, I'd say, let me think, 98% of the calls they get, and you'll see why soon. This will work to connect with callers, to set your stage for success far better than any other verbiage that I've come across, and this is not randomly selected verbiage, trust me. All right, so we want to start by setting the stage for success. The first thing I like to talk about is what describes your practice environment. You see, if we want our team members to connect with callers, it's not reasonable to expect them to do that if it's mayhem at the front desk. if they're locked to an area where they're distracted and it's noisy and it's chaos. So the question is your environment polluted or is it serene? And I submit that the more serene you can make it, and I'll show you how to make it serene even when it's busy, because I know we want it, if it's too serene, that means there ain't no business, so that's not good. But we'll give you some tools for that in a second. But the other issue about environment is that environment is in here. I think it was Kevin Hall who reminded us that Gandhi said that we must be the change we want to make in the world. And that means having an attitude, a vision, a mindset. And we'll talk about it later at another paradigm I have where you have to envision your outcome. And that's extremely important. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the preconceived notions that we hear and more often don't hear from team members that can sort of pollute the environment in here. And here are some of the concerns that I was just alluding to in no particular order. Okay? A lot of us are perfectionists. We were talking about that earlier too, Julie. And I know I'm one. And I also was proud of that for quite some time because in our society, we're raised to believe that perfectionism is a virtue when in fact, it's a vice. Why is it a vice? It's a vice because it limits us. It leads to procrastination. It makes us unwilling to commit to the necessary exercise of learning by doing. It leads to paralysis by analysis. And so, and Dan Sullivan, who was the head of strategic coach, goes farther. He says it's responsible for more deaths in the 19th and 20th century than anything else because he talks about the ideology, the need to purge the society of vermin or undesirable characters. It was basically a variation on perfectionism. Instead of celebrating diversity and allowing for a little bit of static, which is inherent in the human condition, everything had to be just exact, a new world order. It's dangerous. Anyway, we don't have to get that heavy on that. Oh, it's too late now. People say it's not my personality. Actually, we want it to be your personality. We're not asking you to be anybody other than who you are. What we are offering is the opportunity for your personality to shine through the telephone. Some people bemoan the fact that they weren't hired to do this. Well, we live in a dynamic world. We hope that you can embrace change. That's one of the hardest things for any of us to do. And I have learned, and this is where I learned the meaning of the word passion, is the suffering part. To help people change and to embrace change, you have to be prepared to meet with some resistance and love them and respect them and find a way to get them to embrace it. If you're truly passionate about something, you're willing to endure that suffering. And we are, because it's that important. We already talked about hating reading off a script. The irony of this is that some of the most memorable phrases that we can conjure from movies, I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse, or I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille, I'm aging myself here, but we're not in Kansas anymore. You talking to me? These are all scripts. These were all words written by some screenwriter who gave it to the actor, said, all right, get off book, as they taught me at improv, get off book, memorize these lines so you don't have to worry about in your head what you're thinking, and now breathe life into them. It's harder for an actor because an actor has to assume a persona. He or she has to be an actor. I'm not asking you or your dental team members to be actors. I'm asking you to just exude your personality. But if you're thinking about what you're trying to say while you're trying to exude your personality, that's hard. That's tough. And that's why there's no substitute for practice. If you're too busy, well, I'm glad you're busy. When that phone stops ringing, nobody's busy. So this is important, but I don't have any illusions that you're busy or not. And that's why what we're going to be offering you are tools so that you can reprioritize and manage this additional task and recognize just how important it is, which is another couple of concerns that are expressed, and more often not, by team members, which is, well, I don't see why this is necessary, because the people who call are low quality anyway. We'll talk more about that when we get to the self-fulfilling prophecy. Okay? Let's not judge books by their cover. In fact, let's not make the cover of the book, which is what more often happens so many times. And I'm not making this up. I'm hearing it. I'm hearing it when we listen in on the calls. Because they do love you once they meet you. The reality is they've already met you on the phone. So we want that first impression to be solid, and that's where attitude comes in. Making progress here. Part of the setting the stage for success depends on your equipment. Is your telephone equipment up to the task? Are you using cordless headsets? What is the quality, condition, and currency of your outgoing messages or voicemail, what people hear when they call and they don't get a live person? What happens when people are placed on hold? And if you're thinking we don't place our callers on hold, we'll have a conversation about that too. But let's talk about cordless headsets, because in a word, this spells freedom. How many people have cordless headsets in their office? Raise your hand high, please. I want to see. Okay, that's actually better than the average audience I speak to, and that's probably 10%. For those of you who don't have cordless headsets, have you considered them or ever had them? Show of hands. Okay. You had them and you don't anymore? Why? Okay. How long ago was it? Okay. I've been using headsets since 1989. At the time, they didn't have cordless headsets. It was a Panasonic corded headset. I literally have not held a cradled phone to my ear, I think, for 25 years, since I started the business in 1989. And I feel sorry for people that do. I mean, it's really uncomfortable just to see somebody trying to cradle a handset between their shoulder and their neck while they're trying to give a positive first impression and working on a computer. And if nothing else, just think about the likelihood of a workers' compensation claim, because that ain't healthy for you. Now, in terms of the comment was made that they didn't work, and she didn't remember why. They work beautifully, but again, it's a matter, and the technology has improved considerably. They will, without a recharge, you can keep the headset on your head, or you can have a single earpiece, so if you don't want to muss up your hair, you know, that's why I have one. 3 hours without a charge, and you can go 300 feet away from its docking station. That means if it is Grand Central Station at your front desk, you can get to a quiet area, which is key to connecting with someone. We can't, you know, there's a myth of multitasking, and the myth even further is that women are better multitaskers than men. Turns out there have been studies done, and none of us is a good multitasker. We do one thing well at a time. We flatter ourselves. I do too. You know, I'm texting, I'm doing this, you know. That's fine. But if you really want to do something well, you do one thing well at a time. And that's where the headsets come in. Plantronics, Hello Direct, Mallory headsets, any of these places will get you a high-quality system for $150 to $250. And you may expect some resistance from your team. Anybody have hearing aids or... I said, anyone have hearing aids? No. Or their parents? Anybody who's had a hearing aid? Anyone who knows someone? Okay. Do you have one? Okay. How long have you had it? How was it when you first used it? No complaints? Okay. That's not the answer I was looking for, sir. But I like honest answers. The majority of people, when they first get a hearing aid, say, this doesn't work. It's like it doesn't sound right. And the reality is it's a different quality of sound, and it takes getting used to. And it's the same thing with a headset. It feels funny. It may even sound different. You can call technical support, and they'll be happy to work with you because there's many variables that will adjust it. But I can't strongly enough encourage you to acquire these headsets for yourself and your team. You'll never go back. That I promise you. Sure. Well, there's Mallory headsets, who I work with directly. Kelly Mallory, it's a small outfit. They're very good. Mallory headsets. There's Hello Direct. and you can contact Plantronics directly. Yes. Yeah, I get this a lot. Talk to me. Yeah. And how's that working? Oh. Not to my knowledge. The question, did everyone hear it? The comment? That she uses cordless headsets. The problem is that they're so discreet that people don't know you're on the phone. And they either think you're being rude or you're crazy because you're talking to yourself. Although these days, you know, that's great for crazy people because everyone talks to themselves now, right? With the cellular phones. The question was, is there something that has a light or something? Not to my knowledge, but your solution is a very good one, and that's what people do. They create a sign that says, on the phone, be with you in just a moment. But the other thing is to get to a quiet area. Depending on the call, it may be appropriate for you to be out of sight anyway. If you really want someone to connect with a first-time caller, I really do recommend a quiet area where you can give this caller your undivided attention. Okay, thank you. Well, outgoing messages, and I don't even know what time we're supposed to stop because we started so late. So I guess I'll keep going until I'm done, and if you're interested, you'll stay. Or maybe they'll let us know when the next session begins. But outgoing messages are voicemail. It's what people hear when they call and they can't get to a live person. I have some rules of thumb. It's very important that you recognize the value of this because I say first impressions don't always wait. We don't know when people will call. When do people call? Do they call us when it's convenient for us? When do they call? When it's convenient for them. That's right. Lunchtime, 2 a.m. Well, that's the world we live in, and it's really, with the technology that's available, it's pretty easy to accommodate them. Just remember, every touch point with a current or prospective patient is an opportunity to demonstrate either your caring or lack thereof and your commitment to the community. I loved what Robert said. What was the context? Oh, about the About Us page on the website. You know, yes, we're proud of Mary. She has continuing education credit. She's a registered hygienist. How about her hobbies? She's a mother of four. She participates in the AIDS ride every year. She's demonstrating her commitment to giving back, especially dental offices. I mean, people in general, I think it really helps when we remind them that, hey, we're human beings. We're not just inflictors of pain. Right? I mean, we care about people, and we do a really good job not only minimizing your discomfort, but contributing to the community. And that's how you get that commonality of interest. Because they go, look at that. Our children are both on the same Little League team. Or, yeah, I support the Girl Scouts too. Well, that helps diminish the question about insurance, doesn't it? When they find that commonality that Dr. Cialdini spoke about. But in general, when people call, don't ever have it ring more than four times. Three times is even better. Experiment. If your team are going actually crazy, tripping over themselves, getting to the phone, well, maybe go to four rings. Again, with current telephone technology, you should be able to set the number of rings at will. When you leave the office, why should somebody have to wait for the phone to ring three or four times before it goes to voicemail? Right? For all we know, they're driving through a bad cell or they're really kind of nervous about calling anyway, so connect with them as quickly as you can. It's a service. It's a convenience. We also want to minimize the content. Somewhere, the first answering machine, probably by a pizzeria or a dry cleaner, was, thank you for calling Luigi's Pizzeria. We're open from 9 to 10 on Monday through Friday. Maybe that's okay for a pizzeria. But if anything, first of all, we don't really have killer hours, especially APA members. We're looking for quality of life and balance, right? So we're not open 9 to 5, 7 days a week for your convenience. If you are, then maybe have the hours. But in general, this just gives callers one more reason not to talk to you. Oh, that's what I wanted to know. All right, so craft an outgoing message that really speaks to people about who you are and why they should care. And keep it less than 45 seconds. I'm actually thinking of changing that to 28 or 30 seconds, because you really can get a lot said in a very short period of time. I'm going to send you the slides, by the way. But you can go ahead and shoot if you want. I just want you to know. How many people have an answering service? Okay. You have an answering service, right? Tell me about it. How long have you had it? Okay. Same company? If I asked you right now, when was the last time you called it and listened to it yourself? A couple weeks. That's pretty good. Do you do it would you call them to get your messages? Okay. Good, because my thoughts are, I get really scared when people have an answering service, not because in principle I don't think they're good. I think they're great in principle. I think in practice, they typically are pretty terrible. I've heard some that are really excellent, and almost without exception, they get terrible. And I don't know if that's because they are victims of their own success, they take on too many clients, but I mean, I've had some unbelievably disastrous experiences where I called one, and I said, I'd like to talk to Dr. Smith. Is she in? Who's calling? I said, well, this is Daniel Bobro. Are you a patient? I said, no, I'm her consultant. Well, I can't interrupt the doctor. I can't leave a message unless you're a patient. I said, well, I'm not asking you to interrupt. I'm just asking you to leave a message. I'm actually her consultant who, among other things, evaluates how well the telephone is being answered. And she hung up. Okay. So in principle, I think they're great. But if you're going to use them, check them often. I mean, and not just saying, hi, this is Dr. Smith, any messages. Just hear how they handle a call. Okay? Strongly advise that. But here's a typical one during office hours. And what we're talking about here is the difference between attributes and benefits, a simply informational message. I think Dr. Cialdini talked a little bit about the difference between attributes and benefits. An attribute is a physical characteristic. A benefit is why the person that you're sharing it with should give a darn. What's in it for them? And every communication you have should have that uppermost in your mind. Thank you for calling ADM, where we're making the connection, helping make connections for our clients. This is Danny. How may I help you? That's how I would answer the phone. But that's an example of a tagline. Hello and thank you for calling our dental office where, for instance, we're improving the health of our community one patient at a time. And apologize, we cannot take your call at this time. Please leave a confidential message so we can return your call and give you the attention that you deserve. Thanks again for calling, and make it a wonderful day. We'll talk about empathy and rapport and enthusiasm. But enthusiasm isn't just when you're talking to someone. Make sure that you infuse your messages, your outgoing messages, with enthusiasm. And how many here have a tagline, an office tagline to go with their logo? You in the back, what's your tagline, sir? Say it again. Family dentistry you can count on. How did you arrive at that? That's what I was hoping to hear. He didn't just foist it on the practice. He had an exercise where his team met, and now they own that, don't they? They were part of the creation. Because, you know, a tagline, the power of a tagline isn't simply, or even so much, to convey who you are, what you do, for whom you do it, and why to the caller. It's to remind the team member who's saying the tagline who we are, what we do, for whom we do it, and why. And that's a real great way to maintain an esprit de corps. So I congratulate you. That's excellent. Because that's what it is, an expression of your ultimate value proposition. Here's one after hours. And again, with feeling, you are talking to people, even though when you're recording it, you may not be talking to people. Thanks for calling. Thanks for your decision to call our practice, where we your tagline. We cannot speak with you at the moment. We look forward to connecting with you soon. Please feel free to leave a confidential message, including, if you'd like, how it is we can be of service to you. If you'd like to speak with us now, whatever your protocol is, however accessible you want to be, you may also learn about more about us at our website. If this is an emergency, we're concerned and invite you to call us. I really do invite you to let people call you. Instead of, if this is an extreme dental emergency, in other words, like, don't even think about calling me unless you're about to bleed to death, right? I mean, because how many people are really going to do it? If you just let them know, we're concerned about you and invite you to call us if we can be of assistance. Little things, just like Robert said, little things make a big difference. During a team meeting, don't say, you know, we're out to lunch, right? Sort of like social media, we're out having a ham sandwich on Twitter, you know. Who cares? No. Yeah. Yeah, dial 911. Amen is my feeling about that. I will share, I was gratified. I spoke at the American Academy of Private Physicians on this topic, and speaking to physicians is a relatively new subject for me. And I actually had, with a question mark, if this is an emergency, please call 911, hang up and call 911. Because I wondered if there was some legal obligation on the part of physicians to do that, maybe. And one person raised their hand and said, do we really have to say that? I said, no, not if you don't have to. You don't have to. I don't want you to. And they were unanimous. That they agreed, even physicians. It's like, give them a way to contact you. If they're dying, I don't think you're going to be sued because your message didn't tell them to call the emergency room. So I couldn't agree more. And this is a little beyond the scope, but when you have something like that, and that obviously is resonating with patients, we want to show our, we show our clients how to get not only testimonials, but video testimonials. Once, there's a nine-step process that I coach people on, and it's part of my TAFI training, the Art of First Impressions, TAFI training. It's astoundingly simple. In 1 hour, I can get your team getting as many video patient testimonials from as many patients as they want. One of the keys is identifying people that have a story to share like that. Well, you know, I called my dentist and he wouldn't respond, and I called you out of the phone book, or I found you online and you talked to me. I have a client in Buffalo Grove, Illinois, who is closed on Tuesdays so he can be open on Wednesdays, because that's when most dentists are closed, because he has largely built his practice on emergencies. He caters to emergencies. We do a pay-per-click ad for them. And Google hasn't wised up to this yet, but who knows about pay-per-click? You know, you pay per click. If you bid on a term like emergency dentist in Buffalo Grove, that your ad comes up in Google. And if someone clicks on it, you have to pay Google. Well, on our ad, we just say, emergencies welcome, call now. So the telephone number's there. Because if you're an emergency, I don't think you really want to be browsing a website, right? I need help now. So they call and they don't click, and we get a new patient, we don't have to pay Google anything. Shh, quiet on that. So, team meeting, that's the chimney. That's where C6 is a constant reminder. But again, it was worth it. This was Eisenhower Mountain. I just on a lark, as I said, ran over there. Didn't really kind of understand what was going on. This wasn't as disturbing as the fact that I had to pay $17 to get into the park because it's in the living desert. Although none of the employees knew where the trailhead was. It just happens to be the access point. But it was great. So on-hold messages are what you hear, what people hear. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. They may not be what they hear. When you're placed on-hold message is what they hear, just to distinguish it from an outgoing message. How many people here have an on-hold message system? Raise them. Good. Not bad. not bad, maybe a third of the audience. Of those who have an on-hold message, keep your hands up, please. How frequently do you update it? When did you create it? Is it still working?
Yeah.
Is it just fading, getting quieter and quieter? I have a physician, my former physician, who had an on-hold message system, and he agreed to have me redo it for him. So I went into his office, like, okay, where is he? He goes, I don't know. And I've been a patient for 8 years. I've been a patient for 8 years, and every time I call him, it gets quieter and quieter and quieter and quieter, and we couldn't find it. He doesn't even know in his office where the on-hold message unit is. It's a cassette tape. We've been offering on-hold messages for 20 years. We only got into the subscription business about 6 years ago, and the reason was that there are a lot of companies that would say, hey, for X dollars a month, we'll update your on-hold message system anytime you want, and you never do. So it's basically free money for the company because they know you're not going to do it because they're not really making it very easy for you to do it. Our system reminds you every quarter with an email and a login to go to calls.aimdentalmarketing.com so that you can see what's playing now and you can update it. I don't know what it's saying, but I called a client in Connecticut last year whose on-hold message says, thank you for calling Connecticut Family Dental. 2009 marks 10 years serving the Waterbury community. Well, it's 2013, okay? So you may have been smart enough to know that you weren't going to change it, and maybe... Right. Well, it's at least neutral. It's not current, but it's not passé, and that's better than being out of date. However, there's an opportunity being missed by not updating your on-hold message, and we already talked about it. The opportunity is to remind people that you're a vibrant, connected member of your community. So it's a chance to not only create a first impression, but to remind your patients what's going on too, what you're up to. And it doesn't have to be all about dentistry. It shouldn't all be about dentistry. It should be about your connections with your community. So keep it current, or make it current. Happy to talk to you about that. It's very... very cost effective and very, 30 minutes a quarter is all you really need to spend to update it. Because we have a library also of text. You don't even need to write your own scripts. And just like with the answering service, call yourself from time to time to confirm the function. Because one of these days that tape's going to snap. Good. Well, that CD is going to fail. What we have is a USB. There's no moving parts. It never fails. Now that I said that, I'll come home and go, oh, somebody. But use it to build a professional image and prepare yourself to speak with the most important person in the world. Who can guess who that is? That's right, your newest patient. Hi, I want to know if you accept my insurance. Oh, no, that's not what I'm saying. All right, we are, if you remember the Taffy introduction, the last line does say, would you mind if I place you on hold for just a moment so I can get to a quiet area and give you my undivided attention. I only recommend you do that if you have a professionally produced, regularly updated on-hold message system. Because what this does is it lessens perceived hold time to the tune of 50%. 60 seconds on the phone seems like 30 seconds when a caller is placed on hold with a professionally produced message. So you're buying time for your team member to reprioritize and get their head right. Let's talk about components for communication. We just set the stage for success. There are three components of communication. I talked to Dr. Cialdini about this too. He knows, we both know Dr. Albert Mehrabian out of UCLA. He was commissioned to do a study on what constitutes effective communication. And it wasn't so much what he identified, because that's easy, but he identified the percentage that each of these components contributes to effective communication. The three components are verbal, vocal, and visual. Verbal is the words that you use. Now, we've been hearing all weekend about how important the words we choose are, and that's true. However, his research showed that that was the least important. It was how we use the words we choose, and more important, it's the expression, it's the body language, the face, the hand gestures, and this is how it broke out. Verbal, 7% of effective communication is the choice of words. How we use the words we choose is 38%. That leaves a whopping 55% of effective communication attributed to visual communication. We're talking to people on the phone, right? That's what we mean by the visual gap. We need to minimize the visual gap because when you're on the phone, patients can't see you, right? Or can they? The reality is that everybody has a mind's eye. And that's why we'll often coach our team members to have a mirror in front of their computer, in front of the telephone, to dress properly, to use posture, to have a cordless headset, because it's hard to be really impressive when you're doing this. My colleague and co-developer of this curriculum, does anybody know Bill Blatchford? Have they heard the name? Bill Blatchford has helped me develop it, actually. Oh, he's not on here. That's funny. Anyway, this is the CDs. But we spent a couple hours having a chat and also 14 telephone calls that we recorded and genericized. But he told the story about, he's in his early 70s, and so when he was a kid growing up, his mom used a crank telephone to call. And every day at 4 in the afternoon, she would make herself up, do her hair, put on a dress, and sit in front of the phone to talk to her sister, Ellen. And Bill and his siblings would laugh. They'd snicker. They'd say, "Mom, Aunt Helen can't see you on the phone." And she would say, "Oh, yes, she can." And I think that's a really good point worth remembering. Nonetheless, we do have a visual gap to contend with because they can see you, but they can only see you based on what you do with the words you choose and how you use the words that you choose. And that's why we're going to maximize the value of those. And one way we do that is by avoiding the self-fulfilling prophecy trap, which holds that when we label something as undesirable, the quality of the communication will inevitably change, and it'll change for the worse. It's putting that book on that cover I mentioned earlier. And a lot of people do this. Often they do it unconsciously. And here's a little baseline that I like to check of how people are doing, so to speak. If I call an office, or you get a call from someone, how do you answer the phone? If I call and I say, "Hi, thank you for calling Concerned Dental Care. This is Mary. How may I help you?" I say, "Hi, Mary. This is Danny. How are you?" What do you think I'm most likely to get as an answer? "Fine. What can I do for you today?" Now, why are they saying that? In a hurry? What else? Why? Automatic response. But what's inherent in it? Why would you say that to somebody? Now, again, you don't know who I am. I mean, that's the presumption. I'm calling and you don't know who I am. What? And why is that? Right? Okay, you're busy. You don't want to have a conversation. You want to move on. Let's delve a little more deeply into the psychology of this. Somebody, you're busy. Somebody calls. You don't know who they are. Is it possible that the presumption is that I don't know who you are. I don't trust you. You're being awfully familiar with me. For all I know, you're trying to sell me something or you wouldn't be so nice. And I'm not going to let my guard down for you until I know who you are. Do you see how much damage you're doing at the very instant at the beginning of a conversation just because this person may have been raised to be polite? And even if they are a telemarketer, they may live 2 miles down the street. Be polite. They'll have nice things to say about you. So how much harder is it to say, "Hi, this is Bill. How are you?" "I'm fine, Bill. How are you?" That makes a big difference to me. And if you do it, it's amazing. People will always say, "I'm fine. Thank you for asking," because they're often surprised to hear it. This is a big baseline for me. This tells me a lot. And again, I don't want to practice what I want to practice what I preach. They may just be really busy in that moment. I'm saying, "Oh, you're not well trained, or you don't care, or this and this." Everyone deserves a bad moment. But in general, this suggests to me that this person doesn't realize the importance of establishing a first impression, a positive first impression. And speaking of that, the reality is we can pretty much predict probably 98% of the calls we're going to get. And what makes people nervous on the phone or uncomfortable in any procedure is when they're not prepared for it. You know, if you just didn't, if you're an endodontist and you were rolled into the room to do your first root canal, you'd be nervous. because you hadn't practiced it before. And you wouldn't do that. And I'm hoping and encouraging people to be as serious and concerned and take as seriously the communication with first-time telephone callers as the performing a dental procedure, because it's that delicate. It's that delicate in operation. And since we can predict the kinds of calls we're going to get, doesn't it make sense to invest a little time to be sure we're ready to handle them? I've just listened to a caller who we're doing a direct mailing for, and the caller said, "Hi, I just got a mailing from you. Can you tell me about your office? You got a bill?" Or more likely, I'll hear, "I have no idea what you're talking about, sir," because they didn't bother to get, you know, situated. Or, you know, now people we do mailings for, we make sure the team knows, but then they'll say, "Oh, you got the flyer. Yeah, yeah, what can I do for you?" You know, so when we do direct mail now for clients, we include the price of this service in the direct mailing. We will unroll it. We will take it out if they ask us to, but only grudgingly, because we know that they're being penny wise and dollar foolish if they don't embrace this technology. But so in general, anticipate the calls you're going to get and prepare your team for them. Those are arrows in your marketing quiver, as I like to call them. And speaking of arrows, remember that we're an attorney friend of mine said, we are masters of the words we don't write and slaves to the words we do. With words that we speak or the arrows that we shoot, you can't bring them back, right? I think that Kevin maybe used that same analogy, or maybe Tom did. So we're slaves to the words we speak, but there are some words that it's okay to be slave to as long as they're the right words. So that's it. Have a plan. Have a predictable plan, a plan for everything that's predictable. It will relieve stress. It's worth the investment. And it'll free them up, as I mentioned before. When you learn the script, you can infuse your personality into your talk, into your communication, for selling the caller. Now, selling is just, my definition is empowering people to make informed choices or communication with a purpose. That's what selling is. Unless you think you're not in the business of sales, the last time your spouse wanted to go for Chinese food and you went for Italian instead, you made a sale. And better, because you got, when they realized that they actually preferred Italian over Chinese, you made a really good sale. And basically, what's the plan when you get a call from a prospective patient? Get the appointment. But it's always good to have a fallback plan B, because you won't make an appointment with every patient. But really, no one should escape without you at least knowing who they are and how you can enroll them into your drip marketing sequence, which is an automated email campaign or an open house or some way to communicate with them in the future. Because people that say no aren't really saying never. They're just saying not now. Unless you really did something to help convince them that they would never want to be a part of your practice. That brings us to negatively and positively charged words. Words are powerful. We know that from everyone else that's led up to this talk. Connecting with the caller requires that we avoid emotionally charged words and try to infuse our communication with positively charged or associated words. An illustration of that is to ask which seminar you'd rather attend: sexual harassment in the workplace and dealing with racism, or would you rather attend this seminar: men and women as allies and friends and celebrating diversity? Probably ahead of me, these are the two titles for the same lecture. Now, somebody once said that he'd prefer to go to the one at the first one, and I asked him why. He goes, "Well, because I know what they're talking about." So I don't know what he meant by that exactly. I think they're equally clear, and the point I'm making is that the one at the bottom speaks to the positive expectation, the better angels of our spirit, if you will. And here are some great positively charged words. Proud conveys passion, that you care and you're proud of this office, this practice. Another one is conservative, and I don't care what your political leanings are. Nobody wants to have you playing fast and loose with their health care. And so using the word conservative is always a winner. And Julie mentioned concerned, which is simply put that you care. You care enough to address what their concerns are. And an example of an exercise that we have with our coaching subjects is to complete the sentence. We show our concern for our patients by, and then you enter your verbiage there. Another arrow for your quiver. Moving right along up the wall, so to speak. So now we're ready to talk about the emotional underpinnings, the foundation of effective communication. Then they are empathy, rapport, and enthusiasm. We'll talk about empathy and rapport first. This is the view. That's actually the Hyatt right behind that peak over there. So. But empathy and rapport, you probably already know the definitions. We've bandied about a number of them this weekend. Empathy is just the capacity to understand others' feelings, to walk a mile in their moccasins. And rapport is making a friend, really, tracking with someone, or a relation marked by conformity and harmony. And this is important because people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. That's right. Another saying that I love, which was stated by Maya Angelou, is that people may not remember what you say, but they'll certainly remember how you made them feel. It's all about establishing that connection before you move on to the questions about insurance or anything else, without making the caller feel that they're being ignored, because if they feel like they're being ignored, they're not going to hear you. And that's where the taffy introduction comes in. Now on to enthusiasm. Here's an enthusiastic bunch. This was boot camp this morning. They kind of tricked us, didn't they, Julie? It was called aerobics. And then they had a guy with a drill sergeant. He took the picture, so with his hat. But I really did this just so we could take a look at Julie's shoulders, because she's scary. See, I wouldn't stand next to her. I didn't want to feel too small. But yes, about Julie? Question is about a listening device. I think you could hear this gentleman, but well, we don't need those because we record all the calls that come from prospective patients because of the tracking telephone number. And what's nice about that is you can hear both sides of the conversation, and incidentally, you do get permission from your team before you do this. And we coach on how to broach this subject because we're talking about human beings and relationships and team dynamics. The last thing that I would ever do is, like some people in this industry who shall remain unnamed, who will, without your permission, record calls and then basically shock and embarrass you or them by saying, "Listen to what I heard." We want to recognize that the team is a unit and that we're a visitor. And my ultimate goal is to be viewed as a welcome member of your team or an extension of your team, not as the sheriff who just rode into town to clean it up. Because that's what happens, unfortunately. So with their permission and their assent and their understanding that we're not doing this to listen in on them so much as we are to help provide them with a tool for self-coaching. See, ultimately, we give you a login to calls.aimdentalmarketing.com with a username and a password so that you and your team can listen to the calls together. And that's how you grow and learn. So I'm all for it, because that's just information that's probably the most powerful coaching tool you can have. Let's keep this up a little longer. No, just because I wanted to see how red you could get. All right. Enthusiasm, sort of the fuel that drives communication. That said, we know people like this. They're at a 10, we'd like them at a 7. But when it comes to the telephone, the reverse is more often true. People are at a 7, and we want them at a 10. Just like now, when I'm speaking with a little bit more enunciation and volume than I normally would if I'm speaking to somebody one-on-one. It's the same with the telephone. You want to make it bigger, because remember, we have that visual gap to contend with. 55% of the communication component is missing. So you got to make it bigger. That brings us on to the art and science of questioning and listening, which is really where the rubber hits the road. And it is an art and a science. Questions are the lubricant of effective communication. And here's just some example of some questions that you might want to incorporate. Arrows in your communication quiver. But actually, I think I want to go back because I want to make sure. I guess I may have moved it forward. Yeah, I did. Okay. I want to define the different types of questions. Well, we'll get to it. The architecture of trust just talks about what actually happens in the brain and what predisposes people to listening. You see, people are more concerned with the why than the what. And often a mistake people make is they tell the what before the why, or they never even get to the why. It's a physiological fact that why connects with the limbic system, and that's what gets people to get engaged and emotionally connected with the decision, and then they rationalize it afterwards. Everybody justifies decisions after they've, you know, just so that they don't feel like they made an impulsive decision, even though most decisions are made by impulse. Now, if the justification isn't there, then they are going to have buyer's remorse. So you need to have both components. You want to have the whole brain working, yours and theirs. This is what I wanted to make sure we didn't miss. There are two general types of question. They are open-ended and close-ended. And in our technology, what we offer, what we recommend, is a really simple process for scheduling solid patient appointments. And that's beginning with close-ended questions, and then the sandwich, not the crap sandwich. Although I don't agree completely with that. Actually, let me digress for a minute about that. So the crap sandwich is that, you know, it's been taught that you're supposed to give good news, and then you give bad news, criticism, and then you end with good news. Or it's called build, burn, build, often. It's very important to be able to impart constructive criticism to people. And I think that that's a fairly effective technique. He said, well, you know, the person still ends up feeling bad. I would submit respectfully that means that it wasn't executed correctly. And the other thing that he failed to do, and I loved everything that Kevin said, but he didn't offer an alternative to that, which I think would have been nice. But one alternative is, who here knows about Toastmasters? Who's a member? I'm a member of Toastmasters. It's like $100 a year, and they have meetings typically twice a month where you have people. It's a safe environment to, to improve your public speaking skills. Obviously, it hasn't perfected it. But one thing that they teach, and I think is probably a more challenging skill to master than public speaking itself, is effectively evaluating a speaker. And there are roles that you assume when you go to a Toastmaster meeting. You're not just a speaker, but you'll be a grammarian, an ah counter, count the ums, the ahs, the you knows that we all tend to speak, you know? You know what I mean? Anyway. But the evaluation is probably more challenging than speaking. To be able to impart criticism to somebody in a way that doesn't shut them down is a real art. So I encourage all of you, it's a wonderful investment. Plus, it's a nice way to meet people, like patients. So that's the architecture of questioning in general. Open-ended questions, which I still haven't defined, and I will now. Open-ended questions, as you may know, are questions that invite an elaborate answer. It allows people to elaborate on their concerns. Closed-ended questions are questions that simply require a short or one-word answer. Yes, no, up, down, north, south, maybe, maybe not. And this is how we recommend you structure once you've done the TAFE. Well, the TAFE introduction actually is a series of closed-ended questions, and we'll see that in a minute. So you gain credibility and permission to ask open-ended questions by first asking harmless closed-ended questions, which, by the way, put you in control of the call. Now, for those of you for whom control is a negatively charged word, don't think manipulate, because that's not what this is about. As professionals, it's really incumbent upon you to control, or if you prefer, guide or manage the call. Because people will call asking questions, how much does a crown cost? They don't really want to know how much a crown costs. They want to know, are you a caring professional that delivers value who I can trust and will treat me better than my last dentist did? That's just not typically asked, because it's a lot easier to ask how much something costs. Doesn't mean they want the lowest price crown. So don't fall into the self-fulfilling prophecy trap either. Begin with closed-ended questions. Continue with open-ended questions, allowing the caller to elaborate, and then close the deal or close with the closed-ended questions. And here's just one paradigm that I just adopted. Recently, I heard Ferocia Knight speak at the AASH meeting in Las Vegas, which is great, the five E's. First thing you want to do is envision. This is your internal talk, your internal reality. You yourself need to have a positive outcome in mind, because if you have a negative outcome in mind, that's going to come through in your communication. The next thing to do is educate the caller. It's sort of the what. It appears you have whatever it is. Here's what I can do and how you can help. So you're already starting to create a partnership, again, as Bob Cialdini talked about today, a partnership with the patient. You then move on to the enrollment stage, where based on what you just shared with them, what would you like to focus on? That's an open-ended question. Obviously, before you get there, you've had some communication. The person, and this is often face-to-face. This is more face-to-face. You can get to this in a new patient call, but only after you've established rapport, conveyed empathy, and exuded enthusiasm through the taffy introduction, largely. What do you feel is the best choice to reach your desired outcome? See how we're putting them in the driver's seat? And we're asking them to tell us what's important to them, and then we empower them by basically saying, well, yeah, we can do that, and this is what it would take at your end. Which of those actions would you be willing to take? What changes might you be willing to make? And then the engagement is to get them to visualize the benefit. I think Bob also talked about people who want, lose 5 pounds, and this is a problem-solution focus. This is why diets fail. Somebody says, I want to lose 5 pounds. I deprive myself for breakfast, so I'm going to reward myself for lunch. Yes? We're getting there. We're just probably 5 minutes. Okay, you're welcome. So you engage them by getting them to visualize in their own mind how they benefit. What's the opportunity that they're going to be able to experience from this? Not if only I lose 10 pounds, then I'll be ready for the prom, or I'll be ready for the reunion. And then you've solved the problem, and now your motivation's gone, and you reward yourself, and then you're back on that merry-go-round. So it's how would you benefit? And what would you risk by doing nothing? You make clear to them that no decision is a decision. And that's when you close. Only then. You've gone through the closed-ended questions. You've moved on to the open probes to find out what's important to them, to get them engaged in the process. Then you ask the questions. Often I'll hear the first question, what insurance do you have? Well, that should be the last question. And we are moving to the end here. I'm happy because I got to the top and I'm heading back down. So let's tie it all together. The first thing we do is sell. And remember, selling is empowering people to make an informed decision. It's communication with a purpose. Helping callers discover their why. Yes, we can is the attitude. We'll see that in the taffy introduction in a second. Establish rapport, convey empathy, exude enthusiasm. Avoid the self-fulfilling prophecy trap, as well as negative words. Use the closed, open, closed questioning paradigm. Remember to translate attributes into benefits. Always finish a statement about a characteristic with "that means," sort of like "but," what Bob mentioned. "That means" is a transition from "we offer evening hours." "That means we're here for you when you need us," for an example. Listen for their want, what's important to them, and only then do you qualify with questions about details. Because a very smart man once said, if we're going to do business together, the details can wait. If we're not going to do business, the details don't matter. So what is it about your practice that you can't wait to share with your caller? And this is all about arrows in your marketing quiver, your communication quiver. Our attributes are, these are great because, and then you say the benefits, translate them into benefits. And again, you shouldn't be bragging on yourself. Your team should talk about you. You talk about your team. You all talk about the practice. third-party credibility. Based on truth, of course. So here we are, the Taffy introduction. Given what we've already covered, let's see if this doesn't resonate a little bit more with you. Thank you for calling Practice Name, where we, your tagline, this is Danny, how may I help you? Hi, I just would like to know how much a crown costs. I'd like to know if you're in my insurance plan. I'd like to know why the world is round. Could you tell me why the sky is blue? I don't care what they ask, except I'm bleeding to death. Can you help me? Okay, then maybe you can break off the script, okay? Otherwise, this is the answer. I can help you with that. Because you can. My name is Danny. May I ask with whom I'm speaking? And when you get the name, use the name. And the harder to pronounce the name, the greater an opportunity you have to make a friend. Think about the person with a difficult to pronounce name or a name that's, or a person with a speech impediment. Take the time to say, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. I think the connection's not good. I want to make sure that I not only know your name, but am pronouncing it correctly. Would you please spell it for me? I promise you, if you think that they're going to be impatient with you, you are mistaken. They're going to say, they've gone through life with people saying, yes, ma'am, how can I help you? Hey, bud, how you doing? What's up, chief? Because nobody wants to bother to take the time to get their name right. Dale Carnegie once said, a person's name is the sweetest sound they will ever hear. So if you get a chance to use the name, use it and use it correctly. Are you in any discomfort presently? It's another question. Notice I'm asking the questions here. The person who asks the questions controls the call. People might say, well, I know they're not in discomfort. Ask anyway, because I'm not really trying to get the information. I'm trying to impart the information. What am I trying to impart here when I ask someone, are you in any discomfort? What? That you care. We care about you. Same thing with this. Who may we thank you for referring to us? Yeah, that would help with me tracking my marketing, but that's not why I'm asking. This is a little more subtle. What information am I imparting by saying, who can we thank for referring you to us today? Yes. What? Well, that would be tracking the marketing. That would be information we're getting. Right. That would be what we're getting. The information that we're imparting is that we're confident. We're so good that you must have been referred by one of our happy patients. Okay, so that's why we ask that question primarily. And then, would you mind if I place you on hold for just a moment so that I can get to a quiet area and give you my undivided attention? Then you let the magic of the on-hold message work. And this is just an example of a scenario that we do, an exercise with our team. We actually ask the caller to evaluate the call handler. And the caller is going to be the call handler because the team members are taking turns role-playing. But this way, the caller gets to be in the shoes of the call handler gets to be in the shoes of the caller. So they know what it felt like, and they know maybe how they could have felt better if the person had used different words or a different emphasis. That's the art of effective feedback, and that's where joining Toastmasters will help a great deal. Well, we're a little bit out of time. I beat the deadline when they were going to close the gate, which was at 4 o'clock, so I beat it by 18 minutes. Sorry, I ran a little bit late perhaps, but I think we made it. And I want to thank you. If you'll just get back the sign-on sheet to me, I'll be glad to communicate with you about anything you're interested in. Thank you very much. You're very welcome.